Blog Talk Radio.
To the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, also national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is author Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Monday, October 29th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Treats for chickens, health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken, healthy pet chicken basics, non-toxic bug relief, treats, organic snacks, and more, all created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com. Snap-lock chicken coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com. Ritter-cages.com and chickensforbackyards.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com. No matter how much we pamper our chickens, no matter how often we clean our coops, there is always that chance they will get mites and lice. If they do, you want to treat them as naturally as possible. Poultry Protector from Carefree Enzymes uses all-natural enzymes to eliminate the mites and lice from your coop, nesting boxes, and chickens with no egg withdrawal period. My chickens don't always have mites and lice, but when they do, I prefer Poultry Protector from CarefreeEnzymes.com. Happy flocking, my friends.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've got a great show lined up for you today. I got off the phone early this morning. You know, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, is up in Maryland. And so I just wanted to make sure he was hadn't floated off to sea or was not underwater or what have you. But he's doing just fine. And so far, so good. And so we've got him coming on today. And today's topic is going to be, we're going to be talking about or having him teach us all about prolapsed vent and egg-bound hens. So it's going to be a great show today. We thank you very much for tuning in. Our thoughts and prayers go out to all the folks, and there's millions of them that are being affected by the storm. Hell, we're being affected down here in South Georgia. Starting yesterday, after church, really, the wind started picking up. It was a little overcast as some of the bands came through South Georgia, but the wind, the American flag out in the garden up on that big aluminum pole, boy, it's just been a flapping all day yesterday and today. We're under a wind advisory down here even in South Georgia from the storm. So as you know, you've been watching the news, looking at the information on the internet. It's affecting millions of folks. So our thoughts and prayers, good vibes, whatever beliefs you have, whatever you got, send it to those folks that are in the heart of the storm, because they're definitely going to need it. I've seen a few pictures already posted on the internet of some of the damage that's been done. It's amazing. So we thank you for tuning in today. If you're up in that area, in fact, I got an email this morning from Louise. And let's see if she's in the chat room already. She may have lost power already. Let me see if she's there. I don't see her in the chat room, but she sent me an email this morning and said, hey, is there going to be a show today? And she's in Jersey. She's in Jersey. So maybe she'll be joining us here in a little bit. If she said she'd join us if she had power. So lo and behold, we thank her for wanting to and thinking about the tuning into the show today, even though she's up there in Jersey and going to get really the blunt of the storm, I think. So again, thoughts and prayers go out to all of you guys. In right in the middle of this stuff, and even we're feeling the effects down here in South Georgia. So hunker down, and you'll be in our thoughts and prayers. But great show today, we hope nonetheless, with Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, again, talking about prolapse vent and egg-bound hens. So that'll be today's show. Looks like Pat's called in. She's going to be joining us in a few minutes, which is fabulous as well. And to enjoy this awesome show. Hey, let me first tell you, just in case we have any issues with the show today, all of our phone bank, you know, we've got a phone bank of 50 lines here on the radio show. All of those are in New York, okay? All the streaming, everything is done out of New York, basically the studio, everything. So the issue is, if all of a sudden we have no sound, we get disconnected, you have dead air, whatever the case may be, just know that this whole radio show is pretty much done in New York, even though I am in Georgia. So whether they lose power, the phone lines go down, whatever the case may happen up there in New York, we may be susceptible to that. So let me first tell you that if the show gets interrupted, if we have dead air, I promise I'll do what I can to get back in and get the show back on air as fast as possible. If it's may say 10 minutes or longer, then I'll try to post in the chat room if it stays up we're down or what have you. So just wanted to let you know. Walter's up in Connecticut. He said all hell is starting to break loose up there. So pardon our homeschoolers for that, but wanted to let folks know he's right up in Connecticut as well. So just wanted to let – Bo its life. You know it. That's funny. I can tell you about something that happened at Churchester too regarding them good old Yankees up yonder, up in Jersey. How you guys doing up there? So hey, we'll be praying for you guys up there in Jersey. I guarantee you. So again, if we have any issues, it's because everything we do with this radio show is broadcast out of New York. So just to let you know that if something happens, we may be susceptible to the storm as well. So let me first get started and get this portion out of the way. We'll bring Pat on live, and a few minutes later, we've got Ann in the chat room is going to call in, and we'll take her question first live on the air when we bring Peter on. But let me go through this. Hey, folks. There's only 2 days left before we give away two awesome chicken coops on this radio show. So let me kind of recap all this information. If you haven't entered, if you're a first-time listener, let me kind of tell you, if you haven't already, how you can have a chance to win one of two awesome chicken coops. Number one, obviously, chicken coop contest number one. We've given away more coops than anybody over the last few months. It's been every month. And in October, we're giving away two chicken coops. So, chicken coop contest number one, brought to you by mypetchicken.com. Okay, this is a password collection contest. Every day since October 1st, let me rephrase that, every weekday since October the 1st, we have issued a secret password on this radio show. We've also posted the secret password on our Facebook page and on our Twitter page. Okay. There will be a total, I believe, of 22 secret passwords. We will issue a password today. We will issue a password tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, our Halloween show, if you're the correct caller, say caller number 41 or 48 or 29 or caller number 3, whatever we dictate as the winning caller, if you're that winning caller on Wednesday, Halloween, and can recite all 22 secret passwords, you're going to win that awesome chicken coop from mypetchicken.com. So how cool. In fact, with that contest number one, you'll get to choose which coop best meets your needs from My Pet Chicken. You'll have a choice of three. You can choose the, there's the four-square coop, there's the salt box coop, and there's the bungalow coop. So if you go to mypetchicken.com, over to the left-hand menu, click on wooden chicken coops. You'll see all three of those coops, and then you can choose whichever one's going to best meet your needs if you win the password collection contest number one. Now, if you can't listen live on Wednesday, I understand there's still another way. You can win an awesome chicken coop. That's chicken coop contest number two. It's from snaplockchickencoops.com, and one of their new made-in-America coops, the all-plastic ones that hold about three large fowl chickens, maybe five or six bantams or ceramas, and they've been selling a lot of these to smaller lots, smaller yards in urban areas. And the way to enter that contest is you got to send me an email. It's very simple. Your email is your entry. Okay, let me tell you how to do that. The email address to enter the contest is contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, when you send me an email, in the subject line, you need to put chicken coop contest. Okay, chicken coop contest, put that in the subject line. And then in the email itself, I only need three things from you. I need your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. Now we'll be random drawing for this contest, and I will try to call the winner live on the radio show Wednesday, but you do not have to pick up to win, you do not have to be live to win, you do not have to be listening to win, any of that. I will contact you via email and telephone if you win, even though you don't pick up when we call you live on the radio show. So that's another way you can win. Again, that's contest@chickenwhisperer.net, one entry per household. So if grandma lives in her own house next door to you, she can enter, but you and your husband living in that one household can enter one time. So one entry per household, please. Two chicken coop contests for the month of October, unprecedented, thanks to our sponsors, and we're giving away both those chicken coops this coming Wednesday. Also, since there was not a fun Friday last Friday, okay, We will also be giving away tons of other prizes on Friday, up to when we give away the two chicken coops. So probably about 8 to 10 prizes we'll be giving away to maybe some fun, more fun trivia like we always do. That'll be this coming Wednesday to celebrate, I guess, Halloween on our special Halloween show. And then, of course, we'll give away not one but two chicken coops. That is coming up this Wednesday. It's crazy. Wednesday, let me tell you, we're going to be giving away so many prizes on Wednesday, including two chicken coops. I'm telling you, it's almost going to be like Christmas, if you will. I had to get that out of the way because I knew somebody during the show would say Christmas and I would have to play that. So now that that's out of the way, we can get on with the show because I knew someone would request it. Alrighty, let me first go over here and bring live the one and the only. You know, you may not know her and her official name, but you may know her as Compost Queen. So who could that be? Yep, you guessed it. The lovely author, Pat Forman. Hey, Pat, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Whisper, it's always a pleasure. Yeah, I thought I heard in that little intro, yay, compost. Did I hear that? Compost rules, I got to tell you. Compost is fabulous. So, boy, we've got quite a time going on here. Talk about interesting times with this massive storm coming up. I'm just sitting here tucked in my little cabin with wood stove going and just as cozy as can be, but my thoughts and prayers certainly do go out to those along the East Coast that are being flooded. Now, as I mentioned in the chat room, one of the things to consider if you do have to have an emergency evacuation, take your chickens with you. And it's pretty easy to take them. Just put them in a cardboard box and cut some slits and put them in there and keep them from drowning. But you know, Whisper, of all these times that we've been tracking, what, some 3 or 4 years now, I've only heard of two chickens drowning in a flooding situation. Have you heard of any others? And not of non-industry chickens drowning.
Yes, I have.
There was an
instance in Roswell, Georgia, where due to overbuilding of the city and stormwater runoff, flooding and things like that, there was an instance where a gentleman lost many chickens due to the flood. It just came all of a sudden, and that was a unique situation because it wasn't massive widespread flooding, but
right.
He just came at the wrong place at the wrong time, and he did lose several chickens by the time he realized what was going on in his backyard, and his pens started to float away, and he did lose several again.
That
was an isolated incident, but it did happen due to stormwater runoff. So
it'll be interesting to see what happens along the Delmyra Peninsula, you know, with all those millions of chickens there in the factory farms. I mean, my heart goes out to them, too. Electricity goes out, and they heat up or can't get their food. So including your thoughts and prayers, all the animals and the livestock that are included in this forthcoming situation.
Absolutely. So what's it like there? I mean, we're already just really, really windy here and cold, but the winds are, we're under a wind advisory. What's, now you're up in Virginia, so what's it like up there for you today?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I'm in the Shenandoah Valley, Lexington, and so we've got a couple of mountain ranges between us and the coast, plus I'm at an elevation of about, oh, I guess, 600 or 700 feet. But what's really weird, Whisper, is it's quiet. It's like I'm in the eye of the storm. There's not hardly any wind at all. We've had very little rain, and we need rain, but it's just really cloudy, mega cloudy. So I don't know what's going to happen as it proceeds on up, or what happened to our wind, because personally, I must admit, I like wind. We've had some. I'm not saying it's absolutely still, but it's nothing like the gusting they're talking about along the coast.
The
leaves are just moving a little bit, kind of swaying back. They're not dancing and showing the underside of their leaves the way they do in high winds.
But it has
taken away most of our foliage over the last 4 days. We've gone from pretty much peak to gray, which is brown. So mm-hmm. most of the leaves are down. Yeah.
I told Jen, I said later this, maybe towards the end of the week, we're definitely going to have to get back out there and collect more pecans. I mean, we've got, tons that we've collected, but we'll have to, with all this high winds, I'm sure a lot more are falling, so we're going to have to get down there out back and collect a bunch more pecans later this weekend and into the week. The wind went down. I'm sure they're just, nuts are blowing out of the trees like crazy, and
Are they your trees, or can you just go collect them somewhere?
No, if you go collect them somewhere, you're going to be charged with a felony. We take agriculture very seriously down here, as you know, and we mentioned that last week on the radio show. If you're caught with more than $500 in pecans from land that's not yours, it's automatic felony. And with some of these nuts being priced at about a nickel a piece, some of these pecans, if they're a big pecan, based on what they're getting per pound, you know, last year China bought them all up, as many as they could get their hands on. So that raised the price up some. But, in fact, all the pecan orchards around here, about a third of the pecans on the world come from right here in Georgia. And these pecan, around this time of year, from late September through Halloween, maybe even the beginning of November, they hire private security firms to patrol their orchards. They post up signs that say, hey, automatic felony if you're caught with more than $500 in pecans, which really, when you think about it, is not that much with what a pecan weighs, and some of them being estimated with weight of being a nickel a piece, they can really wreak some havoc. So yeah, a few years back they made it an automatic felony if you were caught with more. So anyway, yeah, they're on Jen's, as you know, Jen's mom and dad bought the house right behind us when we moved down here, so they could come down and visit grandkids on occasion. And so there's 13 big pecan trees, and that's a boatload of pecans, 13 of them. And so we've already got one of those big storage bucket bins full, and I'm sure we'll probably have at least that many more probably by the end of the end of the weekend. So
Well, and what do you do with them? Do you take them to a mill or crack them yourself?
We're going
to
crack them ourselves. Yeah, we'll probably bag some up. We'll probably give some away as Christmas gifts. We'll probably put some in the freezer to use to bake bread, different types of banana nut bread or muffins or cookies with pecans, brownies with pecans, things like that.
Awesome.
So
I love pecans. You know, you're going to see me at the ALBC meeting. We'll both be there.
Yes,
we
will.
You have too many and need to get rid of some. I mean,
okay, I'll make a mental note.
Pecan pie is one of my favorites.
That's actually coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. And so I'm
really getting excited.
I'm working on the PowerPoint. So we haven't, you know, I haven't even booked my accommodations yet. I'm not sure. Now, are you staying at the Embassy Suites there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
I am.
Because I know that's where all everything's going to take place. You just have to take a little bit of boom. That's where you're speaking. Boom. That's where all the cooking's going to go on. That's where all the educational events are going to go. But I'm cheap, and so and even with that good rate that the ALBC got with the Embassy Suites, I was on Priceline the last night actually looking at, and I was thinking, well, if I can stay in the in the general area for $59 a night, then I can save a lot of moolah by doing that versus So I'm not sure yet what I'm going to do. There would be a perk knowing that Jen could just be upstairs in the room with Caleb and I could just take the elevator down and where all the event stuff is versus maybe her dropping me off or that type of thing. So the convenience factor is definitely there. And they did get a good rate, but we'll see what happens. Nonetheless, I'll be there. I'll be looking forward to it, meeting lots of folks, both fans and colleagues and the whole nine yards. So I'm looking forward to that, not this weekend, but next weekend. With the ALBC. Hey, I know we've got Peter has called in, so I'm going to go to him because we got the storm.
Wonderful.
I'm going to go to a phone call because we've got a person online waiting to ask a question first. Promised her that she could ask the question as soon as we brought Peter on, and then we'd get into prolapse event and egg bound. So let me go ahead and let's give it up for Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. All right. And so, hey, a long time no chat. I know that you're still there, and I know that the ark has been built in your backyard, and you're ready to float away just in case. So.
That's right.
Yeah, well, it's still raining.
And I'm sure it will be for a while. But again, you're right up there in that area too, and so you'll definitely be included in our thoughts and prayers as this Franken storm gets a moving over your area, and I hope that you don't lose any of those loblolly pines there in the backyard.
No,
and,
don't need that.
Yeah. No, and everything else takes care of itself. So hopefully that'll be good. I think I've got a young lady on hold. I'm just going to get right to the chase here.
Sure.
And I believe she's called in. She's got a question. We were talking in the chat room a little bit before the show got started, and I said, look, hey, no chicken expert here, but we've got one coming on today, so I'm sure, you know, let's talk about that. So I think this is her that's online now. I'm going to go ahead and bring her live here. Hey, Ann, is that you? Are you calling in?
I'm here.
All right, perfect. You know, you had asked me your questions and the details about, I think it was one of your silkies or saramas that you had. So you have all of our attention, me, Pat, and Peter. And so explain kind of what you've noticed the last few days, and maybe with our three brains we can put something together for you.
Okay, well, I have a little sarama rooster, and for the last 4 days he has just been sort of staggering and stumbling. He's eating, he's drinking, he's pooping. His eyes look good. His comb is not as bright and full as it used to be. It looks a little dry. He's not crowing. Just wondering what you think it could be.
This was a rooster?
Yes.
And you said his comb's not as colorful. It's kind of pale. It's not as large.
It's kind of pale, and it's, yeah.
Okay. When you say that he's staggering, describe that.
Well, it's almost like he's drunk. I mean, he'll go towards, say the water, and he'll go to one side, and then he'll go to the other. Occasionally he will fall over, but he does manage to get himself back up.
Okay.
He eats, and then he'll scratch around a little bit if I throw some scratch grains out, but most of the time he just sits quietly in the sun.
Okay, when he sits down, how does he sit? How does he present himself?
His head is up. Well, most of the time, unless he's actually asleep. And then, you know, he's just down on his feet.
Okay.
He can't get up on the roost anymore.
Okay, so when he's sitting down, his feet are up under him?
Up under him, yeah.
Okay. Does he ever sit with his with one foot out front at all, ever?
No.
Or both feet out front?
No.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of things it could be. Very, very difficult to point the finger at any one issue and have it resolved as easily as one might want it to happen. But the first thing I would do, and I always recommend this to people because people don't realize that, and it's just more than likely is not the problem, but it's worth checking anyway, you need to check his ears. But the way you're going to do that is get what we call a focus beam flashlight, one of those little mag light deals, so that you can adjust the beam of that light and pull the feathers away. You need somebody to help you do it more than likely. And just open up that ear canal as wide as you can, take the flashlight and look, and you'll know it if you see it. It's an orange, yellow, waxy material, easily pulled from the ear with a tweezer or something like that. And you'll know it when you see it, like I said. And not only that, when you take it out, it usually stinks to high heaven. And so that can cause it. It's a It's an ear infection. We call it ear canker. It has nothing to do with normal canker. It's usually a bacterial infection of mixed bacteria, Pseudomonas being one of them. So you could start there. That being said, if that doesn't prove anything, then we have to start looking at whether this is a gut-related issue. What do his droppings look like?
Well, they look really good. I mean, they're green and white, and they're pretty
solid.
They're
not runny and everything. They're fairly solid.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, all of this stuff is basically by a process of elimination. You start looking at what systems are working, what systems aren't working. So, you know, we'll run through it real quick. We don't have any snotty nose, no swollen face, no runny eyes, no coughing, choking, sneezing, none of that. So that rules out the respiratory system. That's about half the bird. Okay.
Okay.
We talked about the droppings just a minute ago, and you're telling me that the droppings are okay. The bird's eating and drinking, so that system's kind of go, too. So that's the other half of the bird for the most part. That being said, then it only really leaves you with this being a neurological problem, okay? And just what that is would be anybody's guess at this point.
Okay.
So bearing that in mind, here's what I would suggest that you do. Roughly, what does the bird weigh? Just give me a rough idea.
Maybe 12 ounces.
Okay. You want to give this bird, and I always say this, I give the brand name out because this is over the counter, you get it anyway, you might even have it, Bear Brand Baby Aspirin. And I say their brand because all the generics may not necessarily be created equal from my perspective. So one three times a day, just orally give it to the bird. It's best given if you take it and roll it up in a tiny piece of bread and just put it in his mouth and let him swallow it that way, okay?
Okay.
The second thing I would do is I would get some turmeric. You can get any health food store. You want something about 900 to 1,000 milligrams total between turmeric and a product called Bioperine. That's B-I-O-P-E-R-I-N-E. And I would give him at least two of those per day and see if any of these help to mitigate the circumstances here. It's about all you can do if there are no other issues. We don't seem to have a gut issue. He's eating, so you wouldn't think that, you know, any of this wobbliness and unsteady gait is being caused by lack of nutrition. We wouldn't think that that was being caused by the lack of uptake of the nutrition through the gut because the droppings are fairly solid. We don't have any runniness to them. So it appears from everything that we can tell, you know, that he's getting the nutrition, he's getting the water, but there is some other issue going on. And my guess is at this point that that has to be in the neurological part or his nervous system, peripheral nerves of the brachial plexus for the legs and the wings and so on. So it's just difficult to tell. Nobody can tell you without doing an autopsy on the bird, and that's not in the cards. So these are the things that I would do if this bird were mine. These are the places I would start. If after a week of this we're continuing on and having this particular problem, it may not be fixable.
Okay.
But what I would like for you to do, if that is the case, by the time this show comes around next week, you can call back in, tell us, yay, nay, it's not working.
Okay.
And at that point, I would suggest something else to you that I have here in the office that I would give you free to try if you're up for it, but we'll explain that in an email, okay?
Okay. All right, so if his ears do show signs of infection, does he need to be on an antibiotic?
Yeah, then you need to get up with me and we'll get you on an antibiotic for that and tell you how to go about clearing it up and everything else. It's not a big deal to do, but it can be. I have a client who has a recurring ear infection in a couple of birds out on Long Island, and we seem to have now gotten this thing finally under control, but we've been through one antibiotic after another because for whatever the reason, they seem to work for a while and stop working.
Okay.
And we've been through everything from amoxicillin to doxycycline to Otomax to Baytril, and now we're back to gentamicin seems to work. And
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so for a 12-ounce bird, one bear baby aspirin three times a day.
Yeah, split it up. You know, if you gave it to them 7 in the morning, noon is fine. 4 or 5 in the afternoon is fine. Okay, make sure you drink plenty of water.
One three times a day or one whole pill?
One whole pill three times a day.
Okay. And then the turmeric, 900 milligrams twice a day.
Right, but you want to make sure that that is not just plain turmeric. You want it with the bioperine in it. It's a very important because the bioperine acts as a potentiator, which means that it helps the turmeric absorb through the bloodstream and through the intestine. And let us know. Let us know. If it didn't work, we move on to something else. The other thing I would need to discuss with you either by phone or in an email and see if you're interested in doing it, and then I would provide that product free.
Okay. Very good. I will call in on next Monday. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
All right. Peter, I've got a quick question.
Yeah.
It came from a comment in Poet's Wife in the chat room, and she said that she had taken an ear thing. She called it that looked like a human molar. So she pulled this thing out of the bird's ear.
Yep.
Is that earwax? No,
that's an ear infection. That's what we're talking about. Okay.
So that would have been like a pus, like a consolidated...
Yep.
What about earwax? Do chickens get earwax that they need to be cleaned out?
Not per se, no. This is caused by a bacterial infection. It gets deep down in the ear, and it can affect them neurologically, just like people who have an ear infection can go deaf after a while if it's not properly treated. But no, birds.
What do you use to clean it then? Is there a special tool?
You just pull out the earwax that's there. I hate to call it earwax because then it leads you to believe that it's similar to what
the ear thingy works. I think she nailed it when she said little ear thingy. Anyway, so you pull it out with what, tweezers?
Get it out with. You generally it'll come right out for the most part. But I have plenty of photographs in my pile of photographs of things that will show you where the. On a silky, I have one where it's as big as a quarter in diameter. The ear is just so huge from this infection. And
wow!
When they get that bad, they can be very hard to cure because they've gone on a long time and it's deeper in the tissue and so on. But we've got some things in the arsenal to mitigate those things. But best caught early, best get the bucket out, not in this weather, but sit in the yard and watch them. And, when they start head shaking where they didn't do it before, they want to get your net out or whatever you use to catch them and pick them up and examine them. And I strongly urge people to do that. As I said on the show before, in the last few months, we're working on some things. Want to go with more preventative-type medicine than anything else, so not necessarily just medicine, but... treat chickens in a sense of like you would your car. You change the oil on a regular basis, so maybe you should do some things with your chickens on a regular basis and try to stop some of these things before they get so entrenched in a flock or in a particular bird, and then it becomes a heartache for everybody. So I've been working very diligently on those kinds of things, and we've got a few things as we gather steam. So sometime early spring, we'll have a whole show or two about that kind of stuff, that things that people can do. Have some of the things available, to help with those things. Just like, when we came up with the emergency medication kit, I also am working on two others, one for using for wounds and that kind of thing, and I will more than likely have sutures in that. And then I'm working on another one so that you'll be able to do your own coccidiosis checks with a small pocket microscope and everything. So they're in the works. Just take time.
Wow, that's exciting, Peter. Hey, one other question, Peter. I think we had talked about it before, and you said no, but I just wanted to check for our listening audience. The chickens don't get ear mites the way dogs or cats do. Is that true?
Yeah, they do not generally get ear mites anywhere near as readily as a dog does, but they do get them. Okay.
Okay.
they're more rare than common, but like I said, they do get them. And sometimes the this ear canker is mistaken for ear mites. So people will take that yellow, orangey-looking, waxy, stinking core out of the ear and then put permethrin and other things in there, and they just never seem to go away, and eventually the bird succumbs to the disease when it wasn't mites in the first place. So I've actually, in chickens, I've only seen a few cases over the years of actual mites. Most of this stuff is caused by bacteria. And it could be caused by washing birds. It could be caused by birds who have had access to water and got water in their ear. There's a whole slew of reasons and places that they could pick this up. One of the bacteria, I forget right off the top of my head, I'll think of it after the show for sure, but it's common to, yeah, it's always that
always,
way.
Always that way, yeah.
It's common to the human bowel as well, and it comes in several different forms, benign and very aggressive. And so, this is the thing that we see. I'm more inclined to think, and I'll tell you a little story about it, why I think this way, that some of this comes from them actually getting water in their ears. For whatever the reason, not always, but by and large, we have a tendency to see this in folks who raise chickens like game fowl, where they're tied out on a cord on a barrel or a teepee or something like that, where they are constantly outside. So that's part of my thinking there. Have not one shred of evidence to prove that that's the way it goes, but there has to be a method for this stuff to get in there in the first place. Now, could this be a bird that's trotting around in manure up to its eyeballs and then decides to scratch its head with its foot and the seed is planted in that way? Anything is a possibility. But we do see it more sometimes in the game type chicken than we do in the backyard. But I've seen it both ways. Like I said, I've got some really good photographs of it, especially this one silky bird that I wouldn't want it growing in my ear. Jeez.
Ooh.
Huge.
Peter, am I still online?
Yes,
yeah.
You are.
Yes, you are. Since you mentioned that, about a week ago, this little bird had a pretty bad case of lice, and he did get a bath. And okay. I'm wondering if maybe he got some water in his ear and does have an ear infection.
It's very possible, and you also might want to check around and see if there's any creepy crawlies crawling around in the ear. It's always a possibility.
Okay.
What I would do is I would check the bird over from head to toe. I would also look in the bird's mouth to see if there's anything growing in there. Birds get canker, which is a protozoa, sets up shop in the mouth. It can be anywhere, down the back of the throat, under the tongue, on top of the tongue, on the edges of the beak, up in the nasal cleft, in the top of the roof of the mouth, just about anywhere. So, and you'll know it, too. It looks like a little orange dot. They can be all different sizes. Orange, yellow looking dot, and so check it all over, and if you don't have my email, it's chicken chickenbr at firststatevetsupply.com, and you can always communicate with me that way. I may not get back to you extremely quickly. I get overloaded with this stuff, and I try to answer the most important ones first, and sometimes it gets too late for the others. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Very good. All righty. Great. Great question. Great information. Getting some great answers from Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. So very good. All righty. Let's go ahead and start. We'll get involved with our topic today, or our topics, and we can start however you would like, Peter, with.
Okay.
The either egg-bound hens or a prolapse vent or a combination of both. And so I'll let you kind of start our daily topic today with that.
All right. Well, one generally leads to the other.
Mm-hmm.
The egg-bound bird is usually, but not always, a bird that wasn't reared properly as a general rule. And by that I mean too quick a change to a higher calcium diet can cause the problem. Generally, if you're when you're switching feeds and going from a bird that is, you know, just coming into production, I would continue to feed the grower ration until they've at least laid their first egg, and then I would switch over to a laying ration. That way, you don't overload them with calcium. They won't have taken a ton of calcium out of their body, and they'll quickly replace it once they started on the layer feed. But giving calcium in higher doses than necessary to birds that are growing does basically two things. It interferes with their kidneys, and it causes birds to have lifelong problems with wet droppings. Besides interfering with the calcium phosphorus ratio and getting that out of whack, and then you end up with birds with the proverbial shellless egg, or the rubber egg, or the soft-shelled egg, or the paper-thin shell over the membrane, eggs that break, or you find them broken in a nest, or partly consumed, or whatever. Part of the problem with that too is that when this is allowed to happen, it invites egg eating from everybody else. And so that in itself starts to become a problem. Now, some of the things that can go into putting the bird in this situation, certainly genetics is certainly a big part of it. When you start getting into some of the more exotic breeds and the different crosses and inbreeding and so on and so forth, you shorten up the gene pool, and any kind of wacky gene that's around just has a tendency now and then to show itself, and sometimes that's the problem. The inflammation of the oviduct from laying eggshells that are too rough, bacterial infections, you name it, all will lead to problems with passing the egg through the oviduct. There are problems sometimes with spastic muscles in the and nerves in the oviduct itself. That can be genetic, and it can cause reverse peristalsis, which causes the egg to back up the oviduct and drop into the body cavity. By and large, I have found it to be over the life of my career so far. That egg binding is not near as big a problem as people think, but it does occur. The more common one would be becoming an internal layer, laying the eggs and dropping them into the body cavity. And that, again, that comes from genetics as a general rule. It's a hormone imbalance that causes the ovum to ovulate before the infundibulum, which is the beginning of the oviduct. If you were to take the bird apart, you would see that the top part of the oviduct is quite large. And it stays closed until hormonally it opens up, and then it will move in the direction of the next ovum to be ovulated, and that's all done hormonally. It's kind of like a big catcher's mitt, so to speak. I guess that's a good way to put it. And when that ovum is ovulated, it drops into the infundibulum and makes its way down through the oviduct to have the shell and the egg white and all that stuff put on. When that doesn't happen and it drops into the body cavity, then we have an internal layer. And these are all problems that some of them can be resolved, some of them can't. One of the problems you have with the egg binding thing is lack of calcium will cause birds to become egg bound. Okay, and this is what I say, it goes into this mismanagement of the bird during its growth period, putting on too much body weight, putting pressure on the oviduct, and these kinds of things will cause a bird to go into this egg-binding type situation. If the egg is not in a proper ova position and has flipped over and is being presented wrong or in the so-called a breech position, then you've got a problem. Eggs are laid large end first, And it's obvious, just like children. Children are born head first for obvious reasons. And the same goes for an egg. Going the other way around is like trying to drive a wedge into a hole. And so it comes out large end first, and then it just kind of squirts out once the largest part of the circumference of the egg makes its way through the sphincter muscle that at the end of the oviduct. So body weight plays a role, calcium plays a role, infection and inflammation of the oviduct plays a role, hormonal imbalances play a role. All of these things collectively can go into what we call egg binding. What to do after it truly does occur really is a can of worms at best. I think that if the bird truly is egg-bound, you can try increasing the calcium, which might loosen up the oviduct and allow the egg to pass. You can try just about anything you can think of to make that egg pass. The chances of you putting your finger into the cloaca or the vent of a bird and actually making the egg pass, unless it is stuck at the very end of the oviduct at the sphincter muscle itself, are next to none. It's almost impossible to get your finger into the oviduct itself. And the only way that's going to happen is if the egg gets to that point, has opened the sphincter muscle and exposed itself, but the egg, and then the egg can't get any further than that. That's the only time you're ever going to get even close to getting your hand physically on the egg. Now, you may be able to palpate the egg in the oviduct through the abdominal cavity. It's done all the time. Sometimes warm baths, for whatever the reason, more than likely has to do with helping that oviduct relax a little bit and having the egg come out. Putting oils of any kind directly into the vent are useless unless the egg has already exposed itself there and for whatever reason is not able to make its way out of that orifice. But any other stuff is just like giving yourself an enema. It's just going to go straight into the bowel because the cloaca is Greek, I believe, for cesspool, and that's a common urogenital duct.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really get your finger into it at all, and it's kind of a wasted effort. Again, if the egg is starting to present itself and is stuck there, that's a different ball game. Then you end up having to make some decisions. If you can't get the egg to come out, it won't come out on its own. You might at that point try a little bit of olive oil or any other cooking oil on an egg you can actually see part of to maybe help get it out. The warm bath might help, all of those things. But by and large, at the end of the day, you're probably going to have to break the egg and then make sure that you can then remove as much of it as you can. Usually if it gets down that far in the oviduct, if you break it, it'll end up passing it out. And then the next egg coming through, hopefully it'll come down the way it's supposed to and push anything else out with it. But those are some of the things. Some birds may be more prone to it than others. Again, birds that don't have the proper calcium in their diet or don't have a good nutritional diet to start with are certainly, and the research does show this over the years, that they are more prone to these kinds of problems. Too much body weight, too much fat, too big a fat pad under the bird's belly. The fat pad usually will present itself from upon post-mortem. If you were doing it, you would find that fat pad, if it was quite thick and large, usually find it from just under the pubic bones up to the beginning of the breastbone, and that whole area is where that fat sits. Well, just under that is basically where that egg is basically going to come through. So all of these things, lead to being part of the problem. We have a tendency to see it in young birds and old birds. not so much in between, but birds just coming into lay. Again, this is generally hormonal, and birds that are older start having larger and larger eggs as they continue to lay. We see it in birds lots of times that are prolific layers, meaning that they lay every day almost nonstop. It's almost like a disease because they're really, really supposed to take some time off. There should be a day off. A bird can lay quite a few eggs, but on average, birds will lay 5 or 6 eggs, take a day off. Some will take 2 days off. When they don't do that, then it becomes a real issue because there isn't any time for the body to really recover. This would be technically the equivalent of a woman trying to give birth every day. It's a monumental task. We've talked about it before. Egg laying for a chicken is a monumental task. It's a huge undertaking.
Peter, can I ask, is that true for the heritage breeds as well? It seems like my birds, they'll lay maybe 3 eggs out of 3 days, they'll lay 2 eggs, that type of thing.
It's what we call persistency. Has to do with genetics a lot. You know, your modern day egg layer, is by genetic design, genetically selected so that they will produce almost on an everyday basis. Getting upwards of 300 eggs per bird is not uncommon because of the economics of it. I would probably say that a lot of the heritage breeds don't have that characteristic. I would probably look at them doing that 2 to 3 day thing and taking a day or two off.
Is getting egg bound less common in the heritage breeds?
I don't know that to be true. I've never read any studies on it, and we probably won't see anything on that as far as a heritage breed is concerned. But let's put it this way. The plumbing won't get worn out anywhere near as fast as the plumbing of a commercial-type bird. Maybe this is why some of the heritage breeds are better layers even as time goes on, because everything isn't all, overused and worn out. Birds are really reproducing eggs in clutches for reproductive purposes for their own species, not necessarily for us. It's just that we've adapted to our way of thinking. And in the commercial sector, it's strictly done by picking out those birds that are able to produce eggs out of a group of chickens for different crosses that are going to give them the most eggs economically. So I guess in answer to your question, maybe that's why some of the heritage breeds are a little bit healthier. They're not constantly taking those nutrients out of their body. Because don't forget, we have a tendency to forget over the years, birds are foragers. Their whole design was not to be satiated with feed like we generally do. They go out and pick and hunt for whatever they can, scrape together for the day, and whatever it is, it is. So we have made them what they are, whether they're heritage or otherwise. We've supplemented them with feed, and while free ranging is fine, if you're looking for any kind of egg production, you really need some sort of food supplementation, and that's the design of the modern day diet. And when we talked about behavioral problems, we talked about birds that that are cooped up or penned up. Even though they have areas to get away from each other for a bit, they have a tendency to, once they've finished eating, it's kind of like, having kids around the table. Who's going to poke who and who's going to, put their hand on somebody else's plate to take something off. You know how it goes, and chickens are no different, really. I mean, if you really study them over the years, like I have, and I'm sure, Pat, when you get out your bucket and sit in the yard, they are comical as hell. I'd rather watch them than people watch, and I know that sounds weird, but I mean, you learn an awful lot about them, and they are very interesting creatures, and But you know, this can be a problem with the egg binding syndrome. It doesn't really have to be, for the most part, if you're doing the things that you should be doing. That is, letting birds grow without, and we've said this before on the show numerous times, giving birds treats is to satiate your own brain. It hasn't got a thing to do with the overall health of those chickens. Okay? This is nothing more, for instance, if you are feeding a complete feed from the feed store, there's absolutely, absolutely no reason to give that chicken anything else. As a matter of fact, by giving extra grains and all kinds of other stuff, you could be offsetting some of the good things that you're paying for in that $16, $17 bag of feed.
Especially the scratch feed, the corn.
I hate scratch feed. Other than to use it to help mitigate an egg-bound problem or a prolapse problem or whatever, I think scratch grains is a waste of time and money. But people want to do it. I'm not a nutritionist, don't profess to be one, but I know enough about it to know that these things cause problems. I have people come to me that their birds are not producing and they're all upset and everything else, and when you get into what they're feeding them whatever they can throw out from the table, and scratch grains or whole corn. Now, that's a good diet. That's really, really good for nothing. So I just don't believe in the treat thing. They don't need it. If they needed it, I would tell you so. And
Hey, Peter, I've got a question for you. In that I was talking at a wild bird store, did a book signing there in Yorktown last week, and they gave Oprah Winfrey a little bowl of mealworms live. They were just like a little serving taster cup. And I ended up coming home with about 5,000 of them, thinking, well, gee, maybe I should raise these as part of an extra protein for my flock. Do you consider mealworms as treats, or do they have valid nutritional value that can supplement
the
protein?
They have valid nutritional value, no question about it, both on the human side and on the animal side. The issue is, if you are overfeeding protein, then you could put your birds in a gout situation. As a matter of fact, there's a gal on Facebook that has just run into that.
Gout in chickens?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. And a diagnosed case, according to her, the bird succumbed to the disease before I got to actually talk to her. On Facebook. I don't go on Facebook very often. I just happen to check. Oh, somebody wants to talk to me. I don't like Facebook at all. So at any rate, I answered her. I sent her an article in relation to that. And evidently she's got another bird that's ill. All she needs to do is read the article, and she should be able to figure it out from there. But, yeah, she had a what we call visceral gout, which is crystals forming on the inside of the body cavity, on the organs, the lungs, the liver, the heart, the spleen, the gallbladder, the intestines and stuff. It looks like once you cut the bird open, it looks like it snowed and then it froze.
Wow, and that's all the uric acid crystals that have just sort of
uric
formed
acid,
there and
acid crystals
cut them
have,
up?
Yep, they have... It comes basically in two forms: the articular gout in the joints, and then the visceral gout in the body cavity. And she had the visceral type. And of course, even myself, I probably wouldn't have guessed that was what was wrong with the bird, because it is quite rare. But again, it comes from overfeeding generally the protein. It also can come from some vitamin deficiencies. It also can come from dehydration, birds that are not properly hydrated. And, one of the things that people don't realize, and of course we're away from that season now, but in that hot weather, is birds will not drink hot water. They just won't. And they'll drink cold water way before they'll drink hot water, and they'll drink cold water all the way down to the very low 30s just before it freezes, before they'll drink anything that's hot. So, it's critically important you know, that people, you know, when they have birds, understand that they have to eat and they have to drink. And if they're not doing enough of that, then there's a problem somewhere. But that's generally where it comes from. For the most part, more than likely overfeeding protein, maybe feeding the wrong feed, too high a protein for too long a period of time, that in conjunction with not enough liquid being consumed throws them into a gout situation.
Well, two questions then here. Would mealworms have too high a protein is number one, and then two, they're wondering about probiotics to add to the water to help with the gout situation. Can't hurt, right?
I don't think it'll hurt, but I don't see the probiotic mitigating the gout situation because usually what you end up with once it gets that severe is that the problem with it is you can't see it, okay, the visceral gout, you can't see it. It's going to mimic a whole bunch of other diseases and stuff, and the birds are going to be lethargic. Well, what do we know with that? We know coccidiosis, okay? You know, they're going to stand around. What do we know with that? Coccidiosis. So it keeps pointing in the wrong direction, and, you know, you can treat it all day long. I truly believe once they start to have the crystals form, you're kind of done. I don't know of any other way, you know, if you catch it real early, but how would you know?
How would you ever know?
You know,
and you couldn't dissolve them? Or, you know, usually I think of gout if they maybe had too much tomatoes or sardines kind of thing. You know, the foods that trip off the gout attacks.
I don't think that in chickens that's... I've never seen that. I've never seen any research to that effect. Gout used to be a problem quite a few years ago in birds, but it's not... since the advent of a complete feed, that's... And we've talked about this, too. It gets a little bit off the subject of gout, but if you go back and you look at... papers that were written, a lot of stuff that's on the internet about vitamin deficiencies. If you're feeding a complete feed, the chances of you having a vitamin deficiency are next to none. It's almost, and you always have to qualify it, almost an impossibility. The only way that could fail is if the vitamin mineral pack that's being put in the feed was something wrong with it or insufficient in its quantity. But vitamin deficiencies take a long period of time. And
Right. Again,
one of the reasons we don't see them anymore is because of the type of feed that we have available to us. Back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, we didn't have that kind of feed. You're lucky to get a decent bag of feed. Most people fed scratch grains supplemented with other things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You just didn't go to the store on average all over America and go, say, give me a bag of Purina so-and-so or Manipro so-and-so or Nutra or whatever. You just didn't. Wasn't there. And, you know, as they figured out what was going on with birds, with urolithiasis, which is a problem with calcium and bronchitis in the kidneys and so on, visceral gout, and can end up in the kidneys as well. I don't see any way of getting it out. It's calcified. It's there. Now, does that mean if you were lucky enough to stop it in midstream, would the bird survive? It would depend on the severity of it and how impaired the organs become. That's the issue. That's the big issue. Look for the pictures in my book when it comes out in the spring. I'm getting real close.
I can hardly wait. Can I pre-order a copy?
Yeah.
I'm going to just go
I'll make sure everybody that wants one is going to have one. It's going to be.
I want it signed. I want it autographed.
It's going to be it's going to be something that I think everybody, including myself, can be proud of and helpful. That's the issue. I want to be helpful. I'm almost done with all of the chapter stuff, and now it's going back cleaning it up and formatting it, and then getting the picture size and deciding how I'm going to present the pictures. I'm torn between putting them into the chapter itself or just putting a page after each chapter and letting you refer to them, putting them all on one or two pages depending on how many pictures there are. See, when you get into coccidiosis, you start looking at a whole bunch of pictures. Okay, there's, you know, 8 or 9 different species of coccidia. We'll give you the most important ones, but, you know, you can be start looking at 5 or 6 pictures there. You can be looking at several different ones of the intestine itself. So it's a whole lot of stuff. you know, you get into the gout, you start looking at articular gout, you start showing feet and joints, and then you start looking at the visceral gout, you start looking at the body cavity, different organs. So it's a whole lot of stuff, but we're getting there. The writing part has been the hard part. For me, it's been like pulling teeth. I don't know why. There's some days I sat down here at the computer and opened up the next chapter and just sat there like a lump on a log and didn't even put a word down, went away and did something else. So,
been there, done that.
Yeah, and I don't know why, because it's not like I got to look up anything. It just falls out of my mouth, but for some reason, putting it down on paper all the time isn't my bag of tea, I guess. I don't know. But we're getting there. We're getting close to being done. Within about a chapter or so of being done with the written part of it, so we're getting real close.
Mm-hmm. Got an update from Ann, who called in about her her Sarama Roo. She said the little Roo has one ear that is yellow on the inside, but there is nothing to pull out. It is more like a coating around the edges or the outer ear, and there's nothing in the mouth.
Okay. Well, if she's got some yellow stuff in here, the thing to do is compare one with the other. That'll tell you. Generally, that's another thing. We generally do not see this in both ears. That's the other side to it. And but it is very aggressive, and so she may have just the beginnings of it. She may have nothing. I don't know. But if she would, you know, she would take a good, clear picture of it and send it to me, we'll try to see what we can do on this end. But she needs to compare one ear with the other. So if she's got yellow stuff that appears to be on the surface on one ear, generally the other ear will be clear because I don't know if the yellow stuff, whatever she's talking about, I don't know if it belongs in that ear. I don't know if it's part of the skin or whatever. But we see it a lot. You know, I see it more and more. I say a lot. I haven't had one now in months, but there was a time there where, geez, it seemed like everybody had a problem with this stuff. And nobody understands what it is but me, that I know of. I don't know of anybody else talking about it or anybody else that has had any kind of success with a remedy. But we've got it here, and I've helped people with quite a few cases of it. I won't say hundreds, but it's got to be getting close to 100 over the last 4, 5, 6 years. But, you know, it is a problem. And so, some birds will actually make them twist their heads around. I guess it starts to get into the nerves and the muscles and what have you. But my prized picture is the one of the silky with it in the ear. The damn thing is almost as big as its head. So it is a problem as far as you know, those things are concerned. The egg binding thing, I guess we're pretty much close to being done with that. That can lead then to prolapse.
Okay.
This is caused by a number of things, okay? The egg being too big to be kicked out of the vent. So that pushes the membranes around the vent out. Generally, what we end up seeing is a portion of the oviduct come out. It can get nasty. It can get ugly. If you don't recognize it early enough, other birds can jump in there and at the same time have a party with this thing, start pulling on it and making it bleed, and the bird becomes a pick out, you know, within that flock. So what do you do when you have after the egg is passed and you push the vent back in, you clean it up, and you push it back in, and you come out the next morning and it's back out. In the commercial world, we call it a blowout, and the birds are disposed of. There's no remedy for them, no time, you know, to fix it and monkey around with it. In the world I live in, it's a problem we try to fix. Sometimes it's a breakdown of the muscles in the floor of the vent that allow this to happen as well. Sometimes the only way to do it is to have a veterinarian or somebody who's good with a needle get some sutures and suture around the outside and suture it back in place as far as the vent itself is concerned. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The problem with this is if you don't mitigate the problem with what caused it in the first place, then it just goes on endlessly. My solution to this is to force this bird to stop laying eggs. So let's assume that you have an egg-bound bird and you're able to allow this bird to pass that egg. Then what we want to do is increase the calcium intake of the bird, but then we want to make it stop laying. So we're going to take this bird and we're going to put it in a pen where there's absolutely no light whatsoever, and I mean none, okay? Because when we talked about circadian incubation and we talked about the Hardarian gland and oviposition and the circadian clock and all of those things, we said it does not take very much light to cause stimulus of the bird to go into production. It's not like everybody thinks that, you know, that if they don't get the sunlight out today and the sun isn't shining 90% of the day today, that your bird isn't going to be stimulated to go into production. They will be stimulated to go in production before the sun even comes up. So you want to put it in a light, tight box. You want to obviously, you've got to watch these things and monitor them. You don't want to give the bird any food and water for at least 24 hours, possibly 36 hours. Okay? Then you want to bring the bird back on plain water, no food. So if you do this for 24 hours, then you're going to give them water after that. You might put a pinch of vitamins and electrolytes in, but no more than that. And then no food for the next 24 hours. And after that period of time, all the water that they'll drink and a small amount of scratch grain. It's the one time that I care about scratch grains. It's the only thing, in my opinion, it's good for. Okay. What we want to do then is to keep up the nutrition of the bird, but biologically and nutritionally, we want to say, yo, dude, there ain't enough stuff here to make no eggs. We don't want it. So we're trying to turn the hormonal section off, and we're trying to tell it nutritionally that you can't do this. And it may take a few days. On average, I believe it takes somewhere between 10 days and 2 weeks. The bird may not lay another egg, and it may try to lay another egg, and you'll have to mitigate those circumstances as you go along. But keep an eye on that. You also have to monitor the health of the bird. If you can't stretch this food and stuff out to 48 hours, then don't do it. Go with 24, no food, no water, and then bring it back on the scratch grains and plain water. And you just have to ride it out. And if the bird's valuable enough to you, you'll end up doing it. If not, it's a big pain in the neck, and you'll have to decide what you want to do with it. But this has worked in multiple instances. I do not know of a situation where this failed. Okay? And it may have, and people just don't call you back. The bird disposed of the bird and whatever. But I have had many people get back in touch with me and say, you know, it's worked. And, you know, we put the vent back in. We cleaned it all up. And the longer you can keep that bird from laying, the better off you are. Now, you can't keep it in a light, tight box forever. But once you have stopped it from laying, you can certainly limit its daylight hours to less than 8 hours a day. Okay? And at this time of the year, that's pretty easy to do. Okay, so it can stay in a light, tight box, and maybe you let it out for 6 hours, and it gets some light, and boom, back in the box again after 6 hours, and everybody's happy. It eats and it drinks and so on. What this is the equivalent of a bird going into a molt. We're not interested in the bird dropping its feathers. That's not our point here. Our point is to make the bird stop laying, to give the oviduct a chance to recuperate and recover, and hopefully go on and lay eggs again without having further problems. In some cases, after all of this, it will come back and do the same thing. And then you have to ask yourself a question, you know, what are we doing here? You know, is this all going to be worth it at the end of the day? And those are personal questions that this guy can't answer. So those things will be up to the individual who owns that bird to say, hey, you know, both the bird and I have had enough, and it's time to go on to do something else. And then, you know, that's, like I said, it's something I can't answer that to people. I can suggest, but I can't answer it. But that's how you mitigate these things. These are the things that cause it. Having birds that are certainly too fat, improper diet, not enough calcium in the diet, and this goes for for your cytosine birds and those types, they have huge problems when they don't have enough calcium in their feed. Those types of birds, feeding them complete diets similar to what we feed chickens, they have a tendency to pick out things they have taken dislike to, which makes their feed not complete. And if they're not being given additional calcium along the way, they become egg-bound too. And, you know, when you've got a bird that's worth $5,000 and becomes egg-bound, you've got a problem. So it's not just chickens and it's not just turkeys. It's all species of birds that, to my knowledge, that that can have this particular type of a situation. But this is the way you go about preventing it. Get that good nutritional diet. Stay away from a bunch of snacks and treats and everything. It's fun. There isn't any question. There isn't any fun. Question that it's fun. I mean, how many people have ruined a good dog by doing that? You know, I mean, I know a lab technician that used to be over here. She's retired now, but she had a goofball Weimaraner, and that thing was about as goofy could be. And she fed that thing more treats. I think that the dog was fatter than she was. And but I mean, the dog just started to take on a look that didn't even look like the type of dog that it was. It was so huge. You know, the neck was huge, and the body was just robust and round and rotund, and they start to take on these shapes. Well, chickens do the same thing, and it's a subtle thing too. That's the other thing. You don't notice it because when you're around them a lot, they all look the same. You know, if I had a nickel for every time somebody had a problem with a bird and to call me or email me and say, you know, the feathers look good, but there's no body under it. You know, you pick it up and, ooh, got a nice breasted bird and, you know, no meat on the breastbone and everything else. So, I mean, you know, looks can be deceiving sometimes. And a little treat now and then, okay, I'll go along with that. But this stuff of having to buy treats every day for them is not healthy for them in the long run. And I know, there's somebody out there says, well, I've been doing it for 20 years and I never had any problem. Okay, that's cool. I'm okay with that too. They're your birds. You do as you please. But, you know, this is a problem that comes along quite a bit. Again, I think that there are more problems with internal layers. I've seen that much more often than I've seen with the egg bound. But the egg binding does happen, and this is how you go about straightening it out. The prolapse, same thing.
Poet wants to know in the chat room, how can we tell if our bird is fat, being, you know, lifting it, being with it, but if there's is there a guide? Is there, you know, something that's a sure telltale sign?
Well, unfortunately, as a general rule, unless you have a commercial bird, there probably isn't, you know, much of a guideline. But if you're raising some of the guideline that you would use would be if you're raising Bantams. And you're raising one of the ones that is shown, and it's in the standard. Go look and see what they're supposed to weigh according to the standard, and stay reasonably within that. You know, if they're a little bit over, that's fine. But if the bird's supposed to weigh 2.5 pounds, and you got a 4-pound bird, you got a problem. You see, and the same thing for your large fowl. If you're raising Jersey Giants, and they're in the standard, they say they want them to be 10 pounds, and you got a 14-pound bird, you got a problem. And there are 14-pound Jersey Giants. Trust me. So that's where I would start to look. If you're raising heritage breeds, most of the ones on the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy pages will give you a guideline as to what a male and a female should weigh. And I would stick to those fairly close, you know, within reason. And we see this in the fancy as well, that, you know, a lot of the birds, when you go to the standard, a Bantam may not necessarily be a true Bantam anymore because they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I don't know why that is. Well, I kind of know why it is, but not worth talking about here. But those are the things that I would use as a guideline, you know, as to how much a bird should weigh for a specific breed. If you have one that isn't in that realm, it's not in any of the standards, and it's not in the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy website,
I don't know what you would do at that point, but most of them should be around. They should be able to pick up and or pick a similar bird of similar breeding and so on, and see if you can do it that way. If you stay within some sort of reason, it's just that they get too big and then they start having leg problems as well. So I mean, there's a whole slew of things that come along with the bird being on the obese side as well.
So. Okay. Great. Pat, anything to wrap up?
No, this has been really, really interesting, Peter. Yet again, I've learned so much. And your protocol for treating bound eggs, I think, is just really great. I hadn't seen that or read that anywhere. So thanks for sharing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. My pleasure.
Very good. Well, hey, tell us real quick. I know it's been at least a couple of weeks since you've mentioned anything about it. And before you leave and kind of hunker down for the rest of the storm to cross over your place, tell us about the medication kit that you've got. Still selling those, still a great deal. We have some listeners today
yep.
that don't know about it. Tell us about that and how they can order.
Yeah, the medication kit came to life because of the folks on the show who had asked for it, and we put together a kit of your standard medications. They're not all medications. Some of them are nutritional supplements, and the design of the kit is to be a bridge between having something and having nothing until you're able to get something to help you with a problem. For instance, we've got Wazine in there as a warmer, and I know you can go down, you can buy Wazine anywhere, but you can't buy a 4-ounce bottle of it, and you can't buy a 34% Wazine
uh-huh.
unless you buy the gallon. We've given you some Oxytet concentrate, turmeric, oxine, Vitapro B, A-lite amino acid concentrate. There are 10 different products in the box for $24.95. Everything comes with complete directions. And at some point in time here, I have a break point. I have to look up the date. But those who got the early kits will eventually get an updated set of directions. Not that there was anything wrong with the directions that I sent out with those. These are just cleaner looking and look nicer and stuff. And there's nothing really added to it, just made it a lot easier to read, a lot more pleasing to the eye, but we will send them out free of charge to anybody and everybody that did not get those. The design of it is to not only have something on hand, because I can't tell you how many times that I've talked to somebody or somebody has emailed me with a problem, and I'll recognize what it is and say, okay, what do you have on hand? And the reply comes back, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And going to Tractor Supply is like having nothing. And so these kits help bridge that gap. But they also come with complete directions for each and every product that's in the box. They also come with some directions for particular symptoms of gut problems, coccidiosis, respiratory issues, and then suggest what kind of medication you might choose to do that. There are also directions, a complete direction sheet on how to take the oxine, mix it, and use it as a nasal flush, because when you have birds with snotty noses and weepy eyes or gunk in the eye and so on and so forth, oxine diluted properly works very, very well and can help keep the thing in check until you can either use the medication in the box or get more of it to help you get through it. So it's worked out very, very well. Cackle Hatchery has picked up on it as well. You'll be able to buy them this year in their catalog.
Super.
So it's worked out fairly well there, and he's going to order some of the, and has ordered actually, some of the smaller bottles to have on hand for some other issues that may come up as far as them helping their clientele. And he thought it was a great idea. We are working on two others. Don't know exactly when these will be coming out, but hopefully in the short term. But we will have a 100 power pocket microscope in one kit with some slides and with some direction and some fecal flotation solution, so that a person can take a dropping, put it in it, put it on a slide, look at it under a microscope, and then look at the pictures that will be provided and say, I got a problem with coccidiosis. And so you can do your own definitive diagnosis that way. So that's one kit. The other one will have some things in it for those who have birds that were wounded by whatever, a fox or the dog or whatever. So we're working on those. The problem I have now is trying to get the book done. This is travel season for me. This coming weekend, weather providing and everything else, I'll be up in Frederick, Maryland, which is over in western Maryland, so it shouldn't be a big deal as far as getting there is concerned, hopefully. And I'll be there Friday, Saturday, and half a day Sunday. That's over at the Frederick Fairgrounds, the Great Frederick Fair. The Maryland Poultry Fanciers Club is having their annual show there. And then I will be down in Virginia at the fairgrounds, Caroline County Fairgrounds, I think it is, for the Virginia Poultry Breeders Show. That's the weekend before Thanksgiving, I do believe.
Okay.
And then I think I'm off until January and go to Springfield, Mass. For the big show up there at the Congress, and always enjoyed doing that show up there. It's a lot of fun. You never know what you're going to get there because it snows.
Yeah.
And it's a great show up there. They're great people. They're all great shows. I mean, one of the things I happen to like about that show is I can pull my van right into the building, back it up to the table, and unload all my stuff. And that makes life very, very, very easy comparatively to all these other things. So, but anyway, yeah, that Virginia show, I believe, is going to be at the Caroline County. They had another place that they had down in Virginia there that they were holding that at, but it went bankrupt and had nothing to do with the club itself except the fact that they didn't have a home. So, and that's happened to them quite a bit. They used to have it over at Richmond at the fairgrounds there, and then NASCAR bought the whole thing. So that's this is going to be at the show date itself will be the 17th. I should be there on the 16th, and it's a what we call a show and go day. They'll show on the 17th. Everybody goes home the same day. So I believe that's a Saturday. Caroline County Fairgrounds in Reuther Glen, Virginia, and that show starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they coop in on Friday as on the 16th.
Okay.
So that's a really good show as well. So anybody wants to come out and meet me, see me, talk to me, or whatever, buy something, we're there. I got an interesting little project that I'm working on, if you got just a moment here. I think
sure, please.
Not sure it's going to be price-wise, something that I can do and put out there for everybody. But I am working on, I got this crazy idea, camouflage waterers. For those that are hunters that like the mossy oak type thing, we can't get the mossy oak because it's a proprietary thing, but we can get something very, very similar. And I've got several different waters being done in that. I've got a feeder that'll hold 15 pounds of feed. If they turn out right, we may decide, Andy, to do that as a giveaway type thing.
Okay.
Because I don't think I could get enough money out of it. Fairly expensive to do, but I wanted to fool around with it. I kind of like the idea, but we might do it from time to time as a giveaway type thing. Somebody wants to to do it because I know on one of them the putting the stuff on is more expensive than the object.
Right.
But it's one of these whimsical things I got. A guy's a friend of mine, does some things for me and stuff, and he runs a little bit of a everything shop, hobby shop, this and the other thing. My grandson and I go down there and buy our monster truck stuff there, and he does that. It's hydro coating is what they call it, and it's actually a tank full of water, and they put this film on. It's kind of neat, and once the unit is prepared properly, they just dip it in the water on a particular angle, and it just engulfs the object that you're dipping in it. It's pretty neat. Then they let it dry and clear coat it, and it's done. So it's I don't know if you've ever seen it before. People do.
I have not.
yeah, they do gun stocks and all kinds of stuff. He's getting a lot of that kind of trade, cell phone covers, all kinds of stuff people do, because those things don't cost a lot of money because they don't take a lot of this material. It's sold by the foot, and it's fairly expensive. So if you take up a foot of the material, you're talking about a lot of money. But if you're doing small objects, they end up being relatively inexpensive. But anyway, I'll let you know how that all works out, and certainly we can it's got to be first-class product, otherwise I don't want to do it. So I'll keep you posted and let you know. I just thought I'd mention it. But the kits are coming along real good. We've got some to sell yet, and always will have them out there. I think it's a great idea. I don't know where you can go anywhere for $2.50 and get anything that's going to help you with anything in your chickens. But the nutritional supplements, the A-Lite, the VitaPro, the Replimin liquid, those products are in there to help with these types of problems with egg binding and that kind of thing, birds that are not feathering out properly. We've done it before on the show. We've given it away, if you remember, and I don't remember us having one person that called back in and did not help their situation. So we know they work. That's why they're in the kit. So this will not only take care of intestinal problems, the most common worm, roundworms, but it will take care of some respiratory issues. It will take care of some nutritional problems, some feathering problems, egg binding. I think it's a great kit. The reaction from the people at Cackle Hatchery, they thought it was really good because they're trying to recruit me to do the Doc I Need Help thing with them, and I don't know how we're going to work that out. But at any rate, that's where we are. I appreciate you letting me mention it.
Oh, no worries. No, always welcome. And, again, you'll be in our thoughts and prayers as this storm swoops over you. And we look forward to seeing you here. I guess it'll be next Monday, every Monday next week, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. And we appreciate you coming on as always.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Take care now. Bye.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Today's secret password is bloom. Today's secret password is bloom. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today. And of course, that was Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor from First State Vet Supply. And that, my friends, was our special guest segment today. Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com. Alrighty, hey Pat Foreman, tell us, you and I, next weekend, the 9th and 10th, we'll be up in Cary, North Carolina for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference, and tell us a little bit about what your segment or your presentation is going to be about.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's going to be about gardening with and for chickens. It's about it's a half day workshop. There is a fee for it, like with yours, and it's just a lot of fun. But we'll talk about what plants to grow, how to do what I guess I'm calling birdscaping. You know, making structures and planting specific crops for your flock. As well as understanding that truly all feed does not have to come from bags, using lawns as mini pastures for your flock. And so it's just a really fun job. And it's ever evolving, which is interesting. You know, there's always something more to learn. Just like when Peter comes on, I always learn so much. There's so much to learn about gardening. Back at you, Whisper, you've got a really good workshop coming up too. What's yours about?
Yeah, I believe ours, I don't even know what time on Friday, but I know there's a lot of workshops on Friday and on Saturday. Ours will be on Friday, and it's titled Getting Started with Backyard Poultry, and it's basically just that, getting started. It'll cover a little bit about everything, so I've been telling folks, because if they're coming and they're going to spend their money on things, they want to utilize that money effectively and learn as much as they can. So I've been telling folks, if you've kept chickens longer than about 3 years, then go ahead and sign up for something that also interests you, because this is really designed for the beginner, getting started with backyard chickens. So it will cover a little bit about everything. We'll talk about, again, the movement. We'll talk about laws. We'll talk about choosing the right breeds for you, incubation, brooding. Let's see, then coops, predators, a little bit about nutrition, the whole nine yards. Really, if you're just getting started, you've been sitting on the fence for a while, and you're like, nope, this coming spring is the year. I'm going to do it. I'm getting backyard chickens, and I need a good kind of overview of what to expect. This is going to be it. I think it's going to be about 2 hours long. There'll be a little PowerPoint. Most of it will be me yapping and you taking notes. So getting started with backyard poultry, really looking forward to that. And I was telling Jen yesterday, I'm really looking forward to the good food that's going to be that's going to be there that weekend. So definitely the Heritage. And I hope to meet Steve Pope. I hope he's going to be there. And I hope to meet him. I got to bring him a few bottles of Italian dressing, and I'll autograph them for him.
I'm sure he will treasure them.
Oh, lordy, lordy. That's so funny. Yeah, definitely looking forward to that and to seeing you again, Pat.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be our, yeah, gosh, we've seen each other so little. Just to say a little bit about the ALBC is they're holding it in North Carolina, of course, and they're really hoping to attract a lot of wannabes, I guess you'd say, people that haven't quite made a decision about farming, but they'd like to get into it. They'd like to know more about having family flocks, and they just haven't quite gotten started yet. So it's going to be a range of people. They're hoping for a record attendance at this 2012 conference program. And just to go over, it's not just about chickens for the folks listening. Let me just go over quickly some of their workshops. On Friday, they have the pre-conference clinics, which is what Andy and I are both teaching at. They're going to cover heritage hogs. They're going to cover parasite management for GI parasites for ruminants. Of course, they're getting started with backyard chickens. That's Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer. Wonderful Warrens, how to construct and maintain profitable rabbitry. So they're going to go into rabbits, the tricky business of managing a breed association. And when we get into a lot of these minor breeds and rare breeds, that's really critical about handling the breed associations. Then, of course, the garden chicks, the growing with and for chickens. And then it goes on to the main conference. That's just the pre-conference workshops. The main conference ones go on to a heritage farm startup, how you can get started and making it profitable, how to make bucks with ducks. All those little quackers can mean cuck bucks with the ducks, anyway. There's one about horse farming, working with Belgians is what this particular family does. Protecting American agriculture, U.S. imports or exports, demystified. Going to talk about recovering the milking Devon, which is a wonderful homestead breed for a cow. And the hobby, going hog wild, getting started with hogs and pigs. And it just goes on. I mean, I'm not sure how far we're going to go, but it really is a wide and depthy program, and I got to tell you, you meet people there that you could probably never eat before, and they're just your kind of people. It's just really everyone's so accessible and so down to earth and so knowledgeable. You've got everything from farmers to multiple PhD people, and it's just absolutely my favorite, I got to say, my favorite symposium or conference that's gone. So that's my little blurb on that.
Good.
Yeah, you're gonna have fun. So the kickoff banquet is Friday, November 9th, and then it goes all day Saturday.
Definitely
looking
forward
to it. North Carolina.
Yep, definitely looking forward to it.
I'm going to post that on the chat room, but if you want to get the full conference and or register, just go to www.albc-usa.org. That's albc-usa.org. So there you have it.
Perfect. All righty. And looking forward to that as well. Well, Pat, thank you so much for joining us today. As always, want to remind everybody, great week this week. Today we had Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, talking about egg-bound hens and prolapse vents. It looks like tomorrow, a special Tuesday edition of Garden Wise Living with Arlena, talking about year-round gardening. Wednesday is Fun Wednesday. We'll have tons of prizes to give away, including two chicken coops. Thursday, November 1st, we'll have poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, on. And then this Friday the 2nd, another Fun Friday event here on the radio show. So we hope you can tune in each and every day. Pat, take it away, my friend.
Okay, thanks, Whisper. You know, of course, our special guest today was Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, and he owns First State Vet Supply, one of the best places to get information about anything that has to do with chicken health, First State Vet Supply. Thanks to our chat room chickeneers, of course, and all our listeners for clocking in and listening along. And blogtalkradio.com provides the radio, chat, and the video services. Andy Schneider is the chicken whisperer. Of course, I think he's keeping low in these high winds that we've got with the Hurricane Sandy coming along. So he doesn't. We don't want too much. We don't want too much wind under our wings today, Whisper. Of course, and I'm Pat Foreman, and from all of us, absolutely all of us, may the flock be with you, quotes the chicken, evermore. God bless everybody.